Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
The Centers for Disease Control in the USA says that longstanding systemic health and social inequities have put some members of racial and ethnic minority groups at increased risk for getting COVID-19 or experiencing other severe illnesses. With us on the line now is Karen Jones, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Black Caucus and the Center on Black Aging in the U.S. Karen, welcome to Weekend Mornings.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And this CDC statement on their website is a cause for concern, but it certainly is nothing new, especially with the work that you've been doing at the National Black Caucus and the Center on Black Aging, is it?
Oh, no. We've been dealing with and trying to bring attention to and addressing health disparities for decades now. And so this is not anything new. And, you know, the saying here in the United States is when America catches a cold, Black America catches pneumonia. So we're quite used to whenever any type of pandemic, the flu, cancer, any of those sort of diseases that come our way, we seem to get it worse. And there are reasons why. It's the social determinants. It's our environment. It's systemic racism. It's a lot of different issues. And I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of those today.
Yeah, that is, you know, it's absolutely the point, right, of what's going on now, too, with COVID-19. Break down, if you could, you know, you talk about the racism and some of these social inequities or disparities. How does that specifically translate into people getting sicker, being sicker, or not having access to healthcare in the U.S. context?
Well, obviously, America still faces racism in terms of that we are still segregated in many, many ways. Yes, there have been advances, and yes, there have been some of those in the community who have done well, but there's still so many people of color that are left out of the economic strides, educational strides, and obviously any health issues. The reason COVID has been so detrimental in the community, and I say the community of colors because obviously Black America has been hit very hard, but also Hispanic and Asian community and the Indian Native American community has also had high numbers. And that's because, number one, we still live in very dense conditions in terms of we live more in apartments, we live more in dense populated areas. We live in areas where you don't have access to health services. You live in areas where there's a food desert, so you can't have access to healthy food. Most people work in what we call the frontline jobs. So obviously they have more contact with the public, which then puts them more at risk to have, you know, being exposed to the disease. And so you're going to see a spike in those. You know, one of the things when they shut down businesses and said, well, people could work from home, that didn't go to a large majority of particular people of color. They had to have those jobs that put them in the front of the public, and so they were more exposed. Mm. So those are the sort of things that continue. And then, oh, obviously, environment. We still live in places where water is not clean. Mm. You have air pollution. So there are a lot of contributing factors to our health. And when you have weakened immune systems, then obviously you're more prone to pandemics of this kind.
We're talking with Karen Jones, the CEO of the National Black Caucus, the Center on Black Aging. Now, Karen, there's an interesting similarity to the UK right now. The city of Leicester, you may have seen, has been locked down in the UK. And Leicester stands out because it has a disproportionately high number of ethnic minorities in the UK, non-white residents for the most part. And there's been a political call to release the figures and for a greater political awakening or acknowledgement, shall we say, that this disparity exists. What is the political situation like where you are? Is there an acknowledgement of this problem or is there denial?
Well, in the beginning, particularly in our nursing homes where we began to see most of the cases and it was detrimental across the country, we were seeing so many deaths. There was not the data that was released in terms of ethnic and racial demographics. That was then asked. People started asking more about it and demanding demanding it, and then the CDC started requiring it. And so we did start to see the impact. From that, then, of course, again, you had people of color who basically are the healthcare workers, who are the custodians, who are the people who assist people in these nursing homes and in hospitals, customer service. Those then were exposed. And so as a result, data now, particularly when people can go and be tested, they are now taking, making a track and tracking those cases, and we're getting more information. And that's why we know that our communities are being more affected, let alone that those of us who live in those communities, we already know, and we, everyone has known somebody who has either had coronavirus or certainly has died from COVID-19.
Karen, is there any indication of the 2.8 5 million COVID-19 cases in the U.S., any indication of what percentage of that would be people of color or even just non-white, you know, including Hispanics and other minorities?
Well, the last figure I saw was 48%, which is almost half.
Wow.
That's it, considering that, say, for instance, the black community is only 13% of the U.S. total U.S. population.
Right.
That's extremely high.
Yeah.
And so obviously, again, it's longstanding. What we're hoping is that the attention now that has brought upon what me and other organizations like mine and other who have been preaching and asking our legislators and policymakers to pay attention to, we hope this now will bring attention to why we have to look at more opportunities for people to have access to health care. You know, the United States is still one of those countries where, you know, you have to pay to be healthy. We don't have universal health care. We don't have where everyone has access to health care. So we're hoping that this particular pandemic, which ends up affecting our economy, it ends up affecting our business, you know, the whole thing. People have to be healthy, and you can't have a productive society if you don't have a healthy society. So we're hoping that this pandemic, as dreadful as it has been and as impactful as it has been not only on communities but on our economy, that this will be an awakening and we'll actually see some action done in terms of changing it.
Karen, is there a belief or understanding that many COVID-19 cases in the minority community are going undetected or unreported, as many are across Asia, right? Just because people are not going to hospitals, people are not acknowledging to any kind of public health authority that they're sick or they may be sick, and indeed may not be have access to testing as well.
You know, there's still a lot of misunderstanding in terms of in America. There's a long history of distrust of the healthcare system. I think you all may have heard of the Tuskegee Project, where they used African Americans to test out syphilis things, you know, and infected people. They feel like we're guinea pigs. And so there's been some reluctance to trust the healthcare system. When this first started, people didn't know what it was. They had no idea. So people were dying. And I don't think it was, you know, reported as, you know, they were dying necessarily of COVID, but they, you know, were just dying and it was just no big deal. Now, people, I think, are a little bit more aware, much more educated. And I think now people will go to the hospital, but then there's still that fear that, well, if I get there, then who's going to pay my hospital bill or who's going to, you know, and then they're encouraging you not to just go to the emergency room. They're asking you, you know, to call your personal physician first. Let him tell you whether you should go to the hospital. Well, if you don't have a personal physician, then you're already again out in the cold. So there's just so much we have to do in America. And we are a wonderful country. We do have wonderful things. But this is where we have fallen short in terms of making sure that everyone is treated fairly, equitably, and has access to the correct health care.
Yeah, Karen, you raised an interesting point there about the healthcare workers. I mean, what is sometimes forgotten, of course, apart from all the social economic inequality you've spoken of in terms of housing, access to healthcare themselves, they're often at the front line themselves, aren't they? Whether it's in care homes, hospitals, cleaners, retail, food and beverage industries. And the reason I say that is because now that America is opening up, and in some states, arguably too fast, and you're seeing a spike in numbers, then people of colour are exposed again, aren't they, in restaurants, bars, hotels and so on. I mean, is there a sense of frustration mounting that maybe America's opening up too fast and these people are exposed?
Well, major frustration. But, you know, there with the choices, do I feed my family? Do I pay my rent? Mm-hmm. Or do you know? Or do I? Can I just stay at home? How do my children? You know, how do who takes care of my children now that the schools are closed? I feel so sorry for people who do not have the option of working from home. Mm-hmm. They have to go in. So as they go in, they are risking their health. Now, of course, everybody in some places they're required to wear masks, but politically. We still have people who feel like you're infringing upon their freedom if you ask them to wear a mask. And, you know, it's so crazy. I saw a guy, he didn't have a mask on. They wouldn't let him in the store. And so he was mad. He left. He went and got in his car and had to put on his seatbelt. Well, that's because you're required to do that. Now, if you're not mad about having to wear a seatbelt, which can be very uncomfortable at times, you shouldn't be upset. Because we got to get people to understand, if you don't want to protect yourself, at least think about protecting the greater society. And this is something that we're all a little inconvenienced to do until we can get this under control and we can get back to normal. But the longer people fight masks, the fight, you know, I have to go back, flying and sitting next to somebody, and all kinds of crazy things about talking about their freedoms. This pandemic is going to get worse. And, you know, all of us are anxious to get back to a normal life, but we won't do it unless everybody understands we all have a part in making sure that we care not only for ourselves, our own families, but others.
Yeah, but that's been one of the key aspects of COVID, Karen, worldwide, which is that huge disparity between white-collar workers and blue-collar workers. It's really been a disease of, I wouldn't say poverty, but it's really been a virus of income inequality across the world. And there's almost been a certain smugness I felt sometimes from white-collar workers saying, oh, you must work from home. Well, blue-collar workers don't have a choice. They have to go and clean the buildings. They have to go and clean the empty offices to feed their families back home. And if anything, it's magnified that income inequality. And moving forward, does that lead to greater agitation, greater demand for change in the US? Is that a positive we can take from this with the Black Lives Matter movement and so on, that there's a greater urgency for change now in the US?
Well, that's interesting you would bring up Black Lives Matter, because that obviously simultaneously is going on as we're dealing with this pandemic. And it didn't arise as a result of coronavirus. It arose because of police brutality, which is also something that people of color have had to deal with in this country for a long, long time. So simultaneously, those things are going on. And I think people are beginning to be aware, in the middle of a major presidential election, there's just so much happening. I'm hoping, though, that, you know, we call people essential workers here, you know, people that have to go into work no matter what, whether there's a snowstorm, whether they're what, you know. Well, now they're finding out essential workers are also that nurse's aide that takes care of your older grandparents in that nursing home and keeps them clean and healthy. That's an essential worker. The person that fixes your food, so that, you know, the person at the grocery store who's making sure things are packed. Your Amazon delivery person is an essential person. I mean, you know, and we have to respect and want to pay them not only a living wage, but a wage where they're able to maintain a lifestyle where they are able to have proper health care, to have access to correct food, have clean water, have care, all those things. People need to understand that if we don't have a healthy, educated society, then it brings down all of us. And so there has to be a look at how we distribute wealth in this country, how we deal with making sure that people get out of poverty. We have to seriously look at poverty in this country. There's so much that has to be done, and it has to be done. We have to change our political view on just moving forward. And I'm thinking that movement is there. Black Lives Matter certainly is something that has brought more attention to, again, a problem that has gone on for centuries. The best thing that ever happened now was everybody's got a camera. Everybody's got a cell phone. And that's the only reason why now we're being believed that things have been different. But that is just that's a pandemic that's been going on as we're dealing with COVID. So we've got a lot going on here in America, and I think everybody's eyes are going to be opening.
We're talking with Karen Jones, the CEO of the National Black Caucus and the Center on Black Aging. And Karen, as you just so eloquently stated, there is so much to unwrap in the discussion about race and illness and access to health care and good jobs and all that. With your work at the National Black Caucus and the Center on Black Aging, are you seeing that there is a increased interest in what your organization is doing? And are you feeling like perhaps you might have a higher profile or a stronger voice at this particular moment in time? And how do you move forward? How do you take your organization's mission and goal and move it forward to address some of these things?
Well, you know, my organization, National Caucus Center on Black Aging, we've been around for 50 years. And so we've always seen the end result of someone's life, and we've been trying to improve that quality of life, dealing with the fact that as people have gotten older, they've had to deal with racism, and then now they're dealing with ageism, you know, and so many of the opportunities that were denied to them, then as they get older, they're sicker, they're less skilled, they have less housing opportunities. And so my organization works to try to help and assist that. So, yes, what we're hoping now is we're bringing attention to them. And I must tell you, I can't tell you how many Zoom calls, how many webcasts, how many. I'm loving it. And I'm busy, but I want to do it because I think I play a part as so many of us now are trying to make sure we educate people to understand. We haven't just been talking about health disparities because it's a great statistic that we like to throw out there. This is a reality. And it takes down all of us if we don't invest in making the difference. And so I think people are really opening their eyes. We have now commercials from major business and corporations in this country who are really addressing the racism issue. I've never seen that before in all of my life. I see them addressing the issues of looking at and making sure that essential workers are people who are on that front line who make the difference in our lives every day, get the respect. We don't want to just applaud them and sing them. We want to make sure they're paid and that they get the benefits that they deserve. So, yeah, I'm seeing some difference in that. And one of the things my organization is really working on is we want to make sure that we do more intergenerational. We want people to be able to know how to age. We want people to live a long life, but we don't want them to live it sick. We don't want them to live it unemployed or uneducated. We want them to be able to take advantage of it. So we want to make sure we're reaching young people to say, hey, look, you see how what you must do to become an older person. You got to eat right. You got to exercise. You got to get educated. You got to keep politically involved, you know, be an advocate for yourself. And once we teach people and give them opportunities, you know, we won't have the poverty we've seen in this country and in others. So I'm looking forward to, I think, a new attitude, a new way of doing things. And I'm hoping that the momentum that we've seen over the last few months continues and we see some real change over the next year or so.
Karen, thank you so much. We'll certainly hope that momentum does carry on. And we appreciate your time and helping us kind of explore these issues today.
Thank you so much for having me and best of luck and stay safe.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.